Deagle, what's the Tech Gaming Podcast doing in the middle of Alaska?
Not a fucking clue. Hello and welcome to Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 7-8. I am your host as always, and my name is Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me is the one and only Blue Ranger, Eric Blue Swim.
Hello, it's Morphin time.
That's a cool voice there. I think you should carry that throughout the whole show.
I can just imagine the comments. Tell Solid Snake to shut up.
So one of the things I want to do is just kind of jump right in today. We got a number of games to talk about, and I think from looking at the outline, we're going to focus on B-movie themed games. So let's jump on that B-train and start talking about Earth Defense Force, Insect Armageddon, because I know people can't wait.
I know I couldn't. When Insect Armageddon was announced last year, I think it was last year. I was so overjoyed with it. It's like that the amount of excitement I had for the announcement of a new Earth Defense Force game coming to the U.S. I had not felt since I think it was H-Tech announced that Fire Pro Wrestling Returns was coming to the U.S. at a $15 price point.
Was that the PS2 version?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was good. But didn't it take a while to come out? The H-Tech?
There were several years between the original Japanese version and when the U.S. version came out.
No, I thought the announcement. It was like the announcement, I almost forgot about it. And then it was one of those things where reports were coming in that you could find it at different parts of the country. I think I ended up ordering it online. I just couldn't wait anymore. I had to get my wrestle on. Enough talk about the wrestling. Let's talk about bugs, shall we? So tell me about Insect Armageddon, beyond your excitement. Did it live up to your expectations, those lofty ones?
Insect Armageddon is one of the rare games where I can say it was exactly what I was expecting. Going into it, I was kind of expecting...
That sounds like a backhanded comment.
Well, no, actually, it's like, I pegged this one to a T. Mm-hmm. It's like, it was everything I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mostly, but from the screenshots, I could tell it was going to, you know, it was obviously going to have a different vibe to it being, you know, based in the U.S. and in New Detroit. Wherever the hell that is. And, you know, I knew it was going to be, I knew there were going to be differences between 2017 and Insect Armageddon because of Sandlot developing 2017 and,
Vicious Cycle.
Yeah. developing Insect Armageddon. And I have to be honest, I think Vicious Cycle really did a very good job nailing that EDF feel to it, or that flavor.
Okay.
It's like, Insect Armageddon feels but like...
One of the things is that I kind of expected a little bit more polish, but you're right, they nailed that kind of lack of polish from the original game. Whether that was on purpose or not, we don't know. We're going to have to get them on the show. But for me, a little bit of issue with the frame rate. How was it for you?
Well, being like one of like two people who actually doesn't play Xbox Live, doesn't have a gold account. I played the entire thing solo. Didn't have any local co-op or anything.
Okay.
And I only noticed, you know, when I was going through the campaign, I think I could probably count on one hand how many, you know, times I could the game noticeably felt like it was slowing down a bit.
Okay. That's not the experience I had playing solo.
Didn't you play more online and...
No, I played it. I tried to give it a fair share. I played online, I played local co-op, and also solo. But one of the things, I got stuck with the... once I got the homing rockets, I kind of stuck with that. And so maybe that had the tendency to kind of, you know, get those and to lock on to the different, you know, swarming UFOs above. Maybe that had an effect on the frame rate.
That could be as well. I mean, when the game is like really going, you know, when you're in the middle of a firefight, it has the intensity of, you know, like a Michael Bay movie, like, you know, like Michael Bay's Transformers. And I think a lot of the inspiration for Insect Armageddon probably was, you know, Michael Bay's Transformers. Because
you don't think Starship Troopers?
Now, I've never seen Starship Troopers, so
that's required viewing. You're gonna love it. If you like EDF, you're gonna eat that up.
Okay, I think I saw it over at Big Lots for like $5 a few days ago, so I might have to check it out.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm such a cheap bastard with stuff like that. It's like when the minute Big Lots raised their DVD prices from like most DVDs are $3 to most DVDs are like $5. I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah, they used to have a good selection of $4 PC games, and then when they brought them up to $6, I was like, no, guys, I'll go to Steam. Thanks. So, anyway, back on topic. Earth Defense Force. You enlisted. It was a pleasurable experience.
Yeah, I think I put about 15 hours into it.
Yeah.
And I finished the main campaign on the normal difficulty, and one thing that I'm sort of undecided as to which way I feel. I guess I'm a little neutral.
Okay.
On this is that there are three different endings depending on what difficulty.
Difficulty, yeah.
And it's like, you know, you play the first, you know, you play through like on normal, which is the starting out. That's the, unless you're playing like multiplayer, that is the only way to start to play EDF. You have to work your way up through the difficulties, just like in the original. I mean, it took me from like 2007 till just earlier this year to finish Inferno. You know, finish all difficulty levels on 2017. I mean, I was chipping away at that for years.
It almost took you to 2017.
I hope that doesn't mean that I have to replay the game five times over when the year 2017 actually comes. Because
no.
I don't know if I want to put another 190 hours into it.
Of course,
I'm still not done. I'm still not done with it. I haven't found all of the weapons yet.
And there were how many in the original? Three? No.
I think it was only like
170.
I think I have like around 169. I think there were like 175 or thereabouts.
So you're Pokemoning it.
Yeah. I've been grinding away at that thing for far too much far too much time. Well, you know, with having the multiple the multiple endings for the multiple difficulties, I kind of feel it was a way of maybe artificially extending the replay value of it a bit.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, it's like it's kind of holding the true ending, hostage, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I must have hit something. I finished it on normal. I must have hit something because I didn't even see the credits roll.
No, neither did I.
Okay.
I didn't see them
and
either.
I didn't even notice the booklet that came with it. Did you? Yeah. Was there a booklet in yours?
No, there wasn't.
It just had
the DLC code insert, you know, whatever, because I got it at Best Buy.
Oh, okay. I didn't even get that because that's the new thing, because I got NCAA football and no manual on that one, just some propaganda from EA. And an on-screen manual. So, you know, two games this week, sans manual. And I gotta say, I kind of miss it.
You know, there's nothing quite like digging into a really good, well-done manual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's part of the experience. When it's done right, it in its own little way, it contributes to the your overall satisfaction with the game.
Yeah. Now, one thing I don't understand is they said it was to save paper. But now why do they have all these advertisements in there in place of a manual? Like I have three different EA little advertisements for upcoming games, for DLC and stuff like that. Like, guys, if you really want to save paper, well, don't put it in the game because then I'm going to have to sit through that. But I don't know. Let us know online. Send me an email. You know, save paper that way.
You know, and they say you can, like, download the PDF of the instruction manual online. I'm like, who the hell's going to do that?
And then print it out and waste some paper.
Yeah. It's awesome. Worthless. I mean, it's like, okay, with the Foo Fighters Wasting Light album, if you bought it off of Amazon, you would get the digital booklet with it. It was on sale for like $4 a few weeks ago, and I got it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm looking through the digital insert, you know, because it's basically the insert from the CD in PDF form.
Right. Somebody scanned it.
Yeah.
Right.
And You know, it's like, I'm looking through it. Yeah, that's neat. That's nice. That's nice. Yeah, no, that's some nice artwork. I haven't touched it since. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I ever will. It's different when you have the actual physical booklet in your hands.
Because
mm-hmm. there's like always that like little temptation, like when, you know, when you're waiting for it to load up or whatever, to maybe, you know, just kind of open it up, maybe find a little info on some of the enemies or some of the weapons or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And I always like the art when they include art in there. They mix it.
You know, if they're going to get rid of like instruction manuals in favor of in-game tutorials, why can't they just include like some nice artwork? Or yep. an art, like a small little art book or something mm-hmm. like that with it instead. I mean, I love art books. I mean, I have an art book from Bleach, the manga,
mm-hmm.
and I think I ended up getting that thing for like $11 on sale or something like that. It's like every now and then I grab it off of the shelf and I flip through the entire thing because the artwork is just so damn good. If they did something like that with like, say something like Super Mario Galaxy. I mean, sure. an art book instead of like a multi-language manual. I mean, that would be, you know. I mean, let's face it. Right. Everybody knows what they're doing with games, anyways. You
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm. Let the French suffer. anyway, one of the things we've also been playing, I know you as well as I, is MLB Bobbleheads Pro. So one of the things I want to talk about in the interest of full disclosure is I've talked a little bit about last Sunday. Robert, he's one of the PR honchos at Konami. He was kind enough to FedEx me 2 tickets to the Dodgers Padres game this past week, along with a voucher for free parking. Now, I usually go a couple times a year to the stadium. But this time was just completely different. From the moment, you know, I entered the parking lot, I was in the preferred lane, which allowed me to park like just amazingly close to the luxury suites. I mean, I've walked further at the grocery store. And it's interesting because at the stadium there, you go into your own, this own separate entrance where they're just super kind. And they basically apologize for having to check your bag for anything, you know, for explosives or knives and things like that. Once I got to Konami's suite, they had this awesome setup, a fridge packed with beer, soft drinks. I mean, food all around. They had 2 360 kiosks and where people could play Bobbleheads Pro. Now, I admit I spent the better part of the afternoon kind of watching the game. I ran into...
Jeez, I wonder why.
Yeah, I ran into Ray from EGM, friends of the show, Penny Man and Haley Bryce. And just a good bunch of people. So one of the things I missed was playing the game against Dodgers starting pitcher Chad Billingsley. And I missed Dodger shots whenever they hit a home run. But I did get to play the game with Kevin Vlaming. He's the brand manager at Konami and just a really great guy. And he wasn't, you know, trying to push it. And I just mentioned this, you know, for full disclosure reasons, you know, mentioned the setting. But, you know, we sat down and we just had a good time with the game, playing it one-on-one, you know, couch co-op, you know, couch competitive, I guess, in this case. So basically, anyone familiar with the Power Pro series knows the game's angle. It's a pretty solid, you know, simulation with these little cute, usually limbless characters. Now, what's surprising about the game is that, to me, it's a really fun game of baseball, and especially does a good job as a DLC title. They give you, you know, 30 stadiums, and they're modeled reasonably well. They don't have the advertisements. I was at one position where I could look at the game screen and then look outside, and the actual numbers on the baseballs that were hanging from the, you know, Dodger Stadium were the same. They took out, like, the Farmer John's ads and things like that.
And replaced them with G-Nuts.
No, they replaced him with a butterfly. So I don't know how you turn sausage into a butterfly, but they did. You get the teams, and you get most, I think, of the active rosters. Now the game's batter-pitcher confrontation is handled really well. With each pitcher has this repertoire of throws. I was stuck with one guy who had all of 2 throws. I think, you know, everyone has kind of a fastball. And, you know, you have some curves, sliders, things like that. And the batters can choose either a normal or a power swing, which alters the size of the contact cursor. So there's little depth. It's not just, you know, hitting the button. It's not, you know, simple game. There is, you know, a little bit of substance there. And I think the game does a really good job of handling just enough of the nuances of baseball. Like, you have to change pitchers when your guy on the mound gets tired. And that's indicated by stars whirling around his head and basically looks drunk. but you don't have to deal with the micromanagement, making sure the guys are warmed up in the bullpen. Like, all the often frustrating things, you know, when your guy's tired, you go to the bullpen and no one's warmed up in a baseball game can be, you know, really irksome.
The things you usually set, like the AI, to just take right. this, do it,
sim this, coach. Yeah. So the one thing is $10, which is a pretty good introductory deal. Now, I think one of the sole downsides is that the Home Run Derby and the All Star Game are DLC, which I believe are going to be about $5 a piece, which doubles the price of the game if you pick them both up. But if you consider the price of the old Power Pros for Wii and PS2, I think they were the Wii version was $30 and the PS2 was $20. You get a high def version of the game for $20, which is a pretty decent deal.
Now, there's one other mode that's locked out. It's like My Bauble, where you get to play as just one player, right?
Oh, I didn't even see that. My Bauble.
I think that's what the hook is. It's okay. Like, it's like right above the Home Run Derby, and you basically get to control one player, you know, outfielder or pitcher or whatever, and just play a season with that player. At least I believe that's what the book is.
That's going to be $5.
It says downloadable content, so I'm.
If you could play more than one season, yeah, that doesn't seem like it. I might pick up Home Run Derby, All Star Game. I could kind of pass and definitely playing in one position. Like, imagine if you were just playing outfield. You know, you're just waiting. Oh, third inning. You know, here it comes. Fifth inning. Here comes the ball. You know, pay attention out there. So anyway, you know, pretty solid game. I have one code to give away. So let's have a contest. In the show thread, why don't you leave the name of what you think is the best baseball game ever to hit a console or a computer for a chance to win? Is that cool?
That sounds good to me.
Okay. What's your impression? I know you put some time in. Have you played any of the Power Pros games before?
No, this is the first one that I've had the opportunity to play. I mean, I've heard of the series, but mm-hmm. I used to live near D.C., so I would watch the Baltimore Orioles.
Okay.
And
not the Senators. You know,
I don't think they were back in town before. Okay. You know, before I moved.
Oh, that's right. You're a youngin'.
but yeah, I used to watch the Baltimore Orioles all the time when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Tennessee, and they cover the Atlanta Braves around here.
Right.
And but there's never been that like home team. It's not like with the Tennessee Titans or something like mm-hmm. that.
Right.
And my interest in baseball kind of waned a little bit. I'd check out the Home Run Derby and mm-hmm. you know, if the World Series is on, you know, and I wanted to have something for ambiance or whatever, you know, I'd throw it on, you know, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of casually followed the Cubs because mm-hmm. they have with the local cable packages and stuff like that, they give you like a couple of channels and you can see the station the Cubs are on. It's like WGN or something like that.
Okay.
You know, it's like I've been casually following baseball at best. You know, if there's a game on, you know, and I'm having lunch or dinner or something like that, you know, I'll throw it on because, hey, it's a sport. You
right.
know? Mm-hmm. But I haven't really been like a hardcore baseball fan since I moved out of DC. You know, but one of my all time favorite games is Ken Griffey Jr.'s Major League Baseball for the Super Nintendo.
Oh, that was good. Yeah.
Oh, I'd love how you could curve the ball in like an S motion, like a snake,
mm-hmm.
and then smack the guy in the side of the head with it.
Right. I remember playing one baseball simulator. I think it was like 1.0 for the NES. Do you ever play that one? That one had the super crazy, it had a sim mode, but you could also throw like flaming fastballs that would, I think, ignite the bat and also those crazy S-shaped wild pitches and all kinds of crazy stuff like that too. It was like the best of both worlds. You could sim it if you want, or you could get, you know, really crazy and get arcadey. What was that game where baseball was played by robots? Like 2020 baseball or something?
Oh, crap, I can't remember the name of it.
Did I bring up that? Oh, I shouldn't have.
Hey, there's the contest. Name what that game was. No.
That will be too easy, so make you Google that. So, one of the things I also been playing was Resident Evil, The Mercenaries 3D. Now, I don't have any, I know NPDs came out at the time of recording. I don't have any NPD data to indicate how Mercenaries 3D is doing at retail. From what I understand, Zelda was kicking ass. I don't even know how games that are not Zelda, 3DS games in general, are doing for that matter. But I can assume that Mercenary 3D is pushing too many units, because most of my Resident Evil loving acquaintances, they really haven't showed much interest in it. And I think part of the problem is that the game doesn't include like a single drop of narrative. I mean, it's 100% action with no, you know, those pesky cutscenes to have to sit through. And for them, they're really interested in the storyline, you know, of the games, and it completely omits that for better or worse. So that said, I think the game actually fills a nice hole which exists in the 3DS library. Currently, the 3D shooters, whether they're first or third person, are kind of a rarity on the handheld. Do you know of any shooters? Are there any first person shooters right now? Unless you plug in a DS game, I don't think so.
I can't.
Plug in Metroid. So anyway, it's got RE5's controls, which work surprisingly well on the single stick DS. And they don't require people to use the stylus to shoot, which I kind of like, because to me, that never really feels immersive. The one nice addition to the formula is that by using the L button, you know, once you start aiming, you can actually move and shoot at the same time, which I know everybody complained about Resident Evil 5. It's one or the other. And so I think it works as a shooter, because you don't have to do that. Now, I mentioned formula, and Mercenaries is based kind of around the score attack runs of the minigame in Resident Evil 5. The score attack itself kind of comes later, because the combos are only in 20-30% of the levels. It feels like almost an extended tutorial there. So each of the levels, roughly about 50 of them, they give players like a few minutes to wipe out as many enemies as they can. You usually have 2 or 3 minutes. Graphically, the game, when it's, you know, instills, it looks like its console counterpart, but I think it really falters with the enemy animations, which look clunky and maybe even pre-canned when the foes are far from you. It might be to keep the frame rate up, because if multiple hostiles are on screen at once, there's really no noticeable effect on the frame rate. But it is kind of jarring, especially when they're on the roof, they're jumping down, or they fall down. There's no kind of ragdoll animations there. It just looks a little clunky. The hook of the game and what keeps you back, and what's interesting is one of the decisions there, is you have to actually go in a menu and pick out what level you're going to play, you know, next. So if you're playing, you know, 3-1 and you finished it, it's going to stick on 3-1 until you go in the menu and say, hey, I want to play 3-2. So the hook of the game is these unlockable perks, and these give you like the Call of Duty style bonuses, and you get even more bonuses when you complete a level using one of these augmentations. One of the things that the game does well is that the inventory system has been simplified. Often in Resident Evil, it's kind of, you know, a little bit messy, a little bit hard to use. So you use the directional pad to kind of select your weapons. And in the weapon selection, you don't really pick them up. They're automatically doled out for you. You can trade loadouts between the different people once you unlock that using play coins, which is also really nice, because I don't think enough games actually utilize the play coin function. Like I'm maxed out at 300 right now, and you know I need something to spend them on. And then the other thing that kind of pisses me off a little is you can't change weapons mid animation. And I know that that's probably, you know, kind of realistic, but at the same time it removes a lot of the slickness away. If you could do that, it would be kind of cool. You know, you're blasting them with a shotgun a couple times, you're reloading, you know, you switch weapons. It would just give that, you know, hyperkinetic feel to the game. Now I know a lot has been said about the game's inability to rewrite saves, which I think personally is a pretty minor issue, unless you're really into earning your own in-game achievements and unlocks. You know, that's only a problem for those people. But what's there is pretty solid and should entertain 3DS owners who enjoy a good, you know, kind of score run oriented game. So pretty solid, you know, it has its fair share of problems, but I don't think it is the problems that people are making an issue about.
I think the bad publicity over the save features has I think it's going to affect the sales of it to some degree.
Oh, yeah, certainly. If you're on the line and thinking, maybe I should pick this up, you know, waiting to get a new 3DS game, and you see, if you go maybe on Twitter or any kind of the social media sites, and all you see is people kind of harping about that, you might just have second thoughts. You know, for a person that's on the line, you say, oh, maybe I'll wait till it drops in price, or maybe I won't, you know, pick it up right now. So, yeah, that is inevitable. That's going to hurt.
Yeah, Capcom has been rather, I personally want to say,
malicious.
Growing up, I loved Capcom games.
Oh, yeah.
Mega Man X, Super Street Fighter 2, I mean, stuff like that. I mean, those games made me a gamer. I mean, those games are why I'm here. Almost 20 years later, but Super Street Fighter 4 and Street Fighter 4, when they did, and I think you know where this is going, when they did what they did with the costume DLC.
Yeah,
I hear Capcom. I just want to bash them.
Money grab. Yeah. Yeah, they charge for what other companies give out for free, it seems.
It's true.
That's kind of a dirty, you know, when someone gives me a perk, like I'm thinking of... I'm thinking of Dead or Alive for the 3DS. You know, every day you're getting variations, you're getting new costumes, things like that. They're not charging for that. Yeah, it's a different system. You know, 3DS might not have that in place, but they're giving that out to try to create an incentive for people. That's really cool. You know, you kind of turn your game on. And
that was the perfect incentive to pick the game up at launch too. Was because, hey, once this DLC, once the first round has passed, you only have one other chance, and then it's gone for good.
Right.
And because of that, I made sure to turn my 3DS on every single day to get
all
DLC.
Of them.
Yeah.
For some reason, there's one. I'm missing one costume, so it's not. You know, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it, but it's probably a nice incentive.
Probably that Opuna costume for Zach or something.
Yeah. But one of the things is that Capcom, I mean, you know, the palette kind of swapped things, you know, charging for that. Come on.
You know, that's one thing that I truly don't like about downloadable content. Is because it has opened up every company under the planet to the ability to nickel and dime people who pay $60 for the game to begin with. And I mean, it was $80 in my case for Street Fighter 4 because I got the collector's edition and that had a costume pack with it. And that costume pack was a whopping 180k download, you know?
Right.
And I mean, Capcom, it's like I've always been feeling.
Some might say that the blame's on you for buying that. You know? But one of the things is that, you know, Capcom, you know their policy. This isn't the first kind of go around with them. And I mean, when they first announced that, you know, that deluxe edition, I said, no way, you know, I'm not going to buy that because I know their practices.
Yeah. The movie and the soundtrack CD. I'm a sucker for soundtracks.
Okay.
I mean, hey, I bought Mario All-Stars, I have the cartridge.
Right.
You know, but with Capcom, it's like it's because of, you know, most of the costumes being on the disc. You know, most of the costumes they released being on the disc, I didn't buy them. I redeemed the one code that came with the collector's edition, and that was it. The only reason I had access to any of the costumes is because I bought the 3DS edition, which had them built in to begin with, which is how they should have been.
Yep. Next on my list to talk about was Boulder Dash XLT. You ever heard of that game, Blue?
I heard you talk about it in the new releases, but okay. I'm familiar with the Boulder Dash name, but wouldn't know it if the cartridge smacked me in the head.
Oh, okay. Well, it feels like a game that was made just for me, meaning I don't know how well it's going to sell. So let me kind of talk about it. There's three main modes, along with this Zen mode, which kind of lets you explore without worrying about time limit. There's the, you know, arcade mode, let me get that out, is more action-oriented. There's a puzzle mode, which is a little bit more cerebral, and it requires you to grab all the diamonds from each level. And there's a retro mode, which, you know, emulates the graphics of the original game. Now for those that do remember, Boulder Dash isn't too far removed from, I'd say, Dig Dug, where you burrow beneath the ground. Also, you drop rocks, boulders in this case, on the heads of enemies in the game as well. But the goal isn't killing everything. Instead, you want to collect as many diamonds, which are littered across the playfield. Once you, at least in arcade mode, once you grab a certain amount, then the exit opens up and you can make your way to the next level. But, you know, for score hunters, you know, of course, they want to maximize the amount of diamonds that they grab. Now, to make things interesting, boulders, say they're stacked on this pillar of dirt, they're capable of rolling or causing these chain reactions, which kind of makes moving around the playfield dangerous. You have to think about every move. So it's not unlike a session of Bomberman, you know, where you're looking for those kind of plus-shaped areas where the flames will go. So you're constantly kind of looking, you know, the playfield, okay, what's safe, what's going on there. Now the game's graphics have been spruced up a little bit. One of the problems I have is Rockford from the original game. He looks awful now. They made him kind of fat and ugly and a robot. And it's just, you know, who approved this character design?
Think the robot would be able to keep itself in shape.
Yeah, he's a big tubby robot. The screen doesn't scroll smoothly, you know, so it kind of looks like a fancy Xbox indie title, which I know is going to turn off a lot of people. They're going to, you know, look at the, they're going to download the demo, look at it and say, you know, what is this? The actual, you know, character tiles themselves look pretty good, but so if you can get past a little bit of the rough exterior to find that sparkling diamond waiting on the inside, check it out. See what I did there? Diamond. Yeah. How about a little interview with one of the creators and developers of Blood Rain Betrayal? Hey guys, Desert Eagle here with WayForward Technologies. Michael Herbster is going to talk about the studio's upcoming downloadable title, Blood Rain Betrayal. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Now, before we get into the interview, I wanted to share a brief story from E3. Our kind of trio was over at the Majesco booth, and we were looking at what was over there, Cooking Mama, Jaws for 3DS, the Hulk Hogan game, the Kinect game, whose name I forgot right now. And one of the reps asked us if we wanted to see the new Blood Rain game. And our resident cynic, who'll remain nameless, basically said that he wasn't interested. So a few minutes later, we kind of wandered to the back of the booth, and we noticed this really good-looking 2D game. And you probably figured out, and I'm sure the listeners did, we have to bow our heads in shame. It was the new Blood Rain game, and it looked nothing like the previous 3D version entry. So looked really cool, caught our attention. We spent more time with that game than anything else at Majesco's booth. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you guys for taking a look at it.
Yeah, for winning us over. So I apologize for our initial apathy just on name alone. But once you got, and hopefully you'll get our listeners' attention now, can you tell us how WayForward secured the Blood Rain property?
Actually, after our work with Majesco and Abuena's Blob, they came to us for the ideas of bringing back Blood Rain, which before that, Abuena's Blob, we actually went to them looking for the IP.
Okay.
So they actually own the rights to Blood Rain and Buena's Blob. And for the first game, we went for them. And for the second one, they liked working with us so much, they came back to us with the idea of doing Blood Rain.
Awesome. That was an old, Buena's Blob was an old Activision title, wasn't it?
I believe so. I know it was done David by Crane. David Crane. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting. They must have wrestled that away from Activision.
I think they secured the rights shortly before they did the DS game with the green blob, if you remember that from like E3 2011.
Yeah.
I know that that was them, and that was something that they had previously told us that they were looking into doing, which is when we started talking about doing Abuena's Blob with them.
Yeah, very cool. Now, one of the things I thought was really surprising was Betrayal's teen rating, considering I saw a decapitation with this pretty heavy arterial blood spray. So how surprised were you by the ESRB's decision?
we were taken by surprise. When we started development of the game, one of the main selling points was that it would be like WayForward's first mature rated title.
Okay.
And we were all really looking forward to sinking our teeth into it, no pun intended. And when we got the teen rating, it actually was like a hit to the stomach for most of us. It really took the wind out of our sails.
Right.
But we sat down and evaluated what we thought. The fact that we got a teen rating, it didn't take anything out as far as like massive like fatality style killers. We have later on in the game, you'll actually see an object called a grinder. And when you knock the enemies into it, it'll actually pull their corpse into it and like just destroys their body. A cone of blood shoots out of the back. The guy's like trying to claw his way out as he's getting pulled through it. And they still considered it a teen rating. So, hey, if we didn't take any content out and it can still get that rating, then at least the players get to know that they got the full experience.
Now, did you ever think that this may have been like a blessing in disguise? Like for instance, you may get a larger audience. You might not have to age gate videos. I don't know, potential controversy.
I mean, I know we wanted to start potential controversy because we got the teen rating, but no, if anything, I hope it gets to more players overall. Okay. That's the most important thing.
Okay. Now, can you talk about how the team went about converting what was originally like a three-dimensional title into a 2D game? Did any of Blood Rain's older, maybe gameplay mechanics get thrown out, and were any new ones added in?
We did take a lot of liberties on adding stuff, and we did try at first to really like convert a lot of her moveset over, and did not transfer over with the style of game we were making. So if anything, the game's like an offshoot or like a one-time comic book of a retelling of the main storyline.
Okay. So interesting. Now, I didn't think she had the one move where she kind of piggybacks on the guy and bites him on the neck.
We do not have that maneuver. However, if you remember from A Boy and His Blob, the boy had a hug button. We have a harder hug button in our game.
So almost a leech button, right?
Yes.
So one of the things I want to talk about was inspirations for the games. Were there any titles that may have influenced Betrayal as kind of a 2D property?
As far as our like art design goes, I know that it was heavily influenced by like mid-90s comics. We got a lot of stark backgrounds, black on a solid color.
Okay.
This is also to help separate the playfield from the characters, so you can at least see where you're at. For like combat, we were looking at Ninja Gaiden Black and converting it into like a 2D platforming style game.
Okay.
And then for most of our platforming sections, I can admit that being the level designer for the project, I was heavily playing classic Ninja Gaiden and Mega Man X.
Two very hard games. Would you say Betrayal has that same level of difficulty? I know it was kicking my ass at E3.
I would say with the last couple of people that I've talked to press-wise playing it, I've had to talk them through not too many sections, but just, hey, this will help if you do this. Try a couple of things here. So the game will spit you up and chew you out on your first couple of passes through.
Yeah, those damn press noobs. Now, one of the things you mentioned was the art. Now, after seeing the game in motion, I mean, it looks incredibly fluid, and I know that this is, or I think it's WayForward's first next-gen game. How many frames of animation are in the game?
If we're talking pure character frames and NPCs, I think we're at like 7,500.
Wow. Okay. Now, what was the process of animating all the different characters and NPCs like? How did you go about doing that?
I know they started a concept phase, then they get handed off to our in-house animators, and from there I know they draw on tablets, and I'm not sure beyond that point where we go from there. It's gets to a automated system after that point that I have no clue who does what.
Pure wizardry.
Yeah, magic.
Magic.
Yeah. Auto magic. That's the word I was looking for.
There you go. So let's talk time. How long did the game take to move from, say, the design docs to certification?
I believe our design doc started last year around May.
Wow, okay.
From there, I'd probably say I think we are currently still like in the final stages of certification, but I know we're almost there. Like it's literally within like the last stretch. I wouldn't even say a couple of days max.
Okay. So any idea when gamers might be able to play it?
I've been told August 30th for or PSN and August 31st for XBLA.
Awesome. Okay. So one of the things in closing, has a specific price point been discussed for the title?
$14.99 on PSN and 1,200 Microsoft points on XBLA.
Okay, not bad. So, 15 buckaroos. Not bad at all. So Michael, I really want to thank you for coming on the show. I know WayForward has been one of the last industry holdouts for us, and hopefully you guys won't be such strangers.
Feel free to contact me or Jordan anytime you guys have a question.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So how about that blood rain, Blue?
I gotta tell you, I love a good vampire, rain. As long as they're not eating me.
Just the bugs. Just the bugs. I think it's time for some trivia. That's what we do about this time. So this week, I'm going to mix it up a little. For this week's trivia, you're going to need to put on your thinking cap, as I'm going to dispense with the multiple choice format. Okay.
However, why does my thinking cap say dunce on it?
It's the pointy one. So anyway, all the answers this week have one unifying element. They all begin with the letter B. Got it, my brave bandito friend?
Blue here, and I got it.
Yes. See? That wasn't a dunce cap after all. Number one, this 1980 Stern arcade game is the first coin-op implicated in the death of a player. In 1981, Jeff Daly died of a massive heart attack right after playing. While in 1982... Peter Burkowski passed away from stress induced by the game, according to the local coroner. Name the game. Killed two people.
Oh, shit. Well, it's definitely not World of Warcraft.
think World of Warcraft killed some people?
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm sure.
Brain cells. Okay. StarCraft. And that's killed some people. StarCraft you don't fuck with.
Yeah. I swear, that's... I can never understand how people can, like, ignore the urge to go to the bathroom when playing a game. It's like, sooner or later, it's like, you're going to realize, gotta pee, gotta pee, gotta pee, gotta pee.
Right.
Gotta pee.
Pause. Yeah. Thank God for the pause button. Any ideas? Starts with a B? Throw a B name game out there.
I think I'm going to go with Breakout.
Nah, no one died playing Breakout. They died playing Berserk.
Ah, crap.
Next one. You broke your good... You were on a roll last week, weren't you?
Yeah, I think I hit 4 out of 5.
Okay. You can make it up with number two. This 1985 video game was subtitled Tales of the Unknown, Volume 1, and loosely based on both Dungeons & Dragons and Wizardry mechanics. In 2004, one of the developers of this game lampooned the title, poking fun at dungeon-crawling stereotypes. Surprisingly, this parody... shares the title of its inspiration. What's the title? Starts the B.
1980s games. Those are my weakness.
What was it? 2004? I'll give you a hint. It was a PS2 game.
Oh, crap. Oh.
Here's your clue. Rhymes with Lard's Fail.
Oh, Bard's Tale?
Yes, Bard's Tale. Blue helped out. Awesome. Okay.
Oh, crap, there's that dunce cap again.
Yeah, put it on for number three. You better get this one. This pistol-packing witch not only carries mean combos, but also a massive...
Bayonetta.
You're not supposed to jump in, but also a massive soundtrack.
I wanted to make...
Name the game, which inspired a 5-disc, 150-song album. What do you think it is, Blue?
I wanted to go for extra credit for fucking up the last two.
Crazy Witch.
I'm going to go with...
Bitch Storm.
Bayonetta.
Correct answer was Bulletstorm. No, you're right. It was Bayonetta. How many other pistol-packing witches are there? Not too many.
Well, I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Hillary Clinton? No. Okay. Our next game is famous for not only pushing the limits of the NES's graphical capabilities, having an overwhelming difficulty, as well as having a trio of protagonists named after skin ailments. What is it?
That is it Battletoads?
Battletoads is correct.
Can you
name those skin ailments?
Let's see. There was
scratch.
It was pimple. Yeah. Was it zits and was it rash?
Rash. Yeah. Was it warts?
Warts.
Warts. Yeah. So there's the three. Okay. Number five. Described as the first name in multiplayer games, this game has sold over 10 million units since first being released in the 1980s. You like the 1980s, don't you? In other territories, it's been called Eric and the Floaters and Don Pepe y los Globos, meaning Pepe and the Balloons. Name it. Eric and the Floaters. That's going to be your new name. I guarantee you've heard of it. And I almost guarantee you've played it. The first name in multiplayer games.
First name in multiplayer games. Oh, shit.
Single word comprised of two words.
Oh.
When you find out, it will blow you away.
Well, let's see. I know it's not Battle Clash. That was a Super Scope game for the Super Nintendo. What the hell is it?
Still around today. They put it out on Xbox Live every year and on Wii and on PS3. Like if a year passed and a version of this game didn't come out, I think the world might end. Or it could be. I mentioned it earlier in the show. Were you listening?
Oh, shit. Well, yeah, I was listening.
Gonna give it to you. Are you ready? Bomberman.
Ah, shit. Shit, fuck, titty bitch.
Wow. We got the explicit tag now.
That's my Tourette's rant for the week.
Okay. Number six, your last chance to redeem yourself. Set in Chechnya, this 2006 first-person shooter was known for its explosive mayhem and powerful sidearms, but also rewarded ears with a choir of gun sounds, with each bang adding its own high, medium, or low pitch voice to the overall mix. Name the game with the choir of guns. Music to my ears. I love the game.
I'm looking at my shelf to see if there's anything that might...
2006, it was on PS2, it was on Xbox, regular Xbox. A pseudo-sequel is coming out soon, this summer, from Code Masters. It was put out by Criterion.
Oh, Black.
Yes, Black is correct.
I didn't play Black, but when you said Criterion, that clicked in my head because I always associate Criterion with Burnout.
Yep.
And then when you said first person shooter, Black was the second thing to pop into my head.
Yeah, Black was awesome. That was a good game. Sadly, body count doesn't look half as cool as Black. So, oh well. So we got some mailbag. And our first letter comes from Tiger Palm. He says, most of your reviews are just as good as the big sites, and some are even better. How come you're not bigger yet? I love these backhanded ones, and I still include them. So I guess I'll answer this one. I know how to become bigger. One of the things we could do is just get, you know, Sean's mentioned this, good old Sean Noel has mentioned this a number of times, be like a bit mob and just get a bunch of people to write and post it all, and you know, all that people checking their reviews and stuff would get a lot of traffic. But to me, it's not really about the size or the numbers, it's just doing quality reviews, I think, that do games justice. That's always what I've been about. We've grown significantly over the, you know, 4 years. tech gaming's been around, and for me, it's more than just size. It's more than just size.
It's how you use it. It's not the size of your pinky; it's how you use it.
Right.
It's always about the quality. Mm-hmm. You know, if the quality is there, everything will come in time.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I certainly agree. So next question comes from Hyrule Warrior. How do you feel about Duke Nukem selling almost as much as L.A. Noire? I'll let you take this one.
Well, I'm willing to bet a lot of those sales are from people who actually are buying it because they didn't think the game would actually come out. And they just want to actually hold it in their hands. And
14 years of pre-orders will do that.
I still can't believe it came out.
Right.
I mean, I've been hearing about that game forever. I mean, almost as long as I've been checking, you know, online video game websites.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I guess I don't really follow the sales numbers or really comment too much on that. But, you know, good for Take-Two. You know, hopefully we'll, you know, Duke Nukem will see another iteration and really do the character justice. This one didn't do the game justice by any means, and hopefully didn't burn down bridges where people will say never again with Duke Nukem. But I do think there is a place for, you know, kind of a humorous first person shooter with an obnoxious flat topped character, you know, out there. I just think it needs to be good more than funny. You know, and actually Duke Nukem was neither good nor funny, so there you go about that. Low Plane Drifter said, I heard that only 1 out of 100 Xbox owners have downloaded an Xbox indie demo. I couldn't verify this, so I'll have to take his word. Even more, I just see indie developers complain about Microsoft. What can Microsoft do to make the games more well known?
You know, personally, I've only bought, I think I've only bought like one Xbox Live indie game.
You're part of the
it's two. I bought one that turns your Rock Band drums into an electronic drum kit. Oh, and okay. The other one was Techno Kitten Adventure.
Oh, I bought that too.
Isn't that good?
No, it's not good, but it's funny.
A sequel that came out. I think it's.
Well, wait. I think I was talking to you, and then the developer was like so happy we mentioned his game about it, and he started like tweeting me for a week. And I don't know. It was amusing for what it was. Those little amusing things, but so those were the two you bought. Now, do you shop? Do you look around the indie marketplace at all?
Yeah, I check it from time to time, but okay. the thing that stops me from committing to buying more Xbox Live indie games is the fact that you always have to be online when you play them.
Oh, is that right?
Okay. Because, you know, it's like I remember when I first bought I had some points left over from buying some Rock Band songs, I think, and I had enough to buy
kit. So even if it's, you know, sold to your console, you buy it, you have to be online all the time?
Yeah, you have to be online to play it. It's a similar DRM to what some of Capcom's PS3 PlayStation Network games go through.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
because the games themselves can't even operate online. That seems like total horseshit.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't tried it lately, so there could have been been changed in a patch.
Sure,
but that's why I've never bought more indie games. Is because I mean it's like I'm mostly an offline gamer. I don't care to jump on live and stuff like that.
Yeah, certainly that's a big that's a big obstacle to overcome. I didn't even know about that. Well, thanks for bringing that.
if it wasn't if Xbox Live indie games weren't like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean I'd be buying them a lot more often. I mean, there's there's good stuff on there that's like a buck.
Right.
I've tried the demo for I Made a Game with Zombies in it. And I mean, for $1, I mean, that's good. There's also Try Not to Fart.
Okay.
Have you tried that?
Oh no, I thought it was a command, not a question.
It's this game.
No, I haven't tried it.
Yeah, it's this game where you have these characters that look like South Park ripoffs.
Okay.
And it's like in a social situation.
That's funny,
like,
right there. That they're kind of ripping off South Park.
And it's like you'll be in like a social situation. Like you'll be at a bar and you'll be talking to this hot blonde. Right. And it's like you'll see the controller on the screen. And like when a button lights up, you have to press that button and hold it down to kind of like comfortably
hold
release
it back.
Yourself.
Oh
yeah, yes. And if you let it go, it's like you'll hear, and the whoever you're talking to will like look towards the screen like with a shocked look on her face, like that's disgusting. Like I think you crapped yourself, and it's like the more you lose control of your gas, it's like the bottom of the screen starts getting this dark green mist on it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And like the conversations get worse and worse, and it's like I will say that it does have a decent amount of dialogue in it.
Yeah, yeah. Is it audio dialogue?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's like you'll actually hear her like say, do you need to go to the bathroom? Or
now does it change based on if you kept your sphincter tight? Does that branch? Does that branch into a different line of dialogue?
I think most of the dialogue is just kind of it's just random banter.
Oh, okay,
it repeats after a couple of minutes or a couple of playthroughs, but it should be like it's just like stupid bar conversations, just chit chatting.
Mm-hmm. Which repeats on its own. Oh yeah, definitely. I'd check that out. It sounds kind of funny. So.
And as the game progresses, you have to hold down more buttons and then release buttons at while holding on to the other ones, and it ends up becoming like Twister for your fingers,
mm-hmm.
With hilarious results.
Actually, sounds kind of amusing. I'll definitely check that one out. Now I'm thinking about Try Not. What's it called again? Try Not to Fart.
I believe it's Try Not to Fart.
Try Not to Fart. Our recommendation of the week. Now, one of the things that I thought from Microsoft is I remember when the last dashboard update, maybe the next to last update took place, and the indies were made. They were really hard to find, and I think they kind of fixed that a little bit. But right now, if I go on the Xbox interface, there's no reason why I should see 5 screens of Jessica Chobot and not like a single indie game of the week mention on the dashboard. It's just, can they find someone else besides her to kind of plug? I mean, every once in a while they'll throw Major Nelson up there, but she's consistently up there. I don't quite get it. And they seem to hide things like the deals of the week and stuff like that.
Of course. Of course, that would mean that you'd have to spend less money for the games you already want.
Yeah, but if you're going to have a deal of the week, don't you want people to encourage, for a 2-year-old game that's going to be selling like 37 copies every week, don't you want to push it and make some money? I mean, that's the whole point of the deal in the first place, right? So, I don't know. I think Microsoft, they don't seem to know how, or they don't seem to care to promote these games. I know, for instance, that the guys at Zona, X-O-N-A is the spelling of that, they're talking about, or they constantly talk about how the rating system is broken. I think you don't have to actually purchase the game to rate it, and so a bunch of people maybe gave it 1 star, and so it ended up getting like a 3-star or even less review. And I think Microsoft could come in and kind of clean that up. I mean, it's kind of disheartening. I think one of the things that we can do, I'm talking to the readers, is keep checking out the indie section. Now, I know I'm part of the problem myself. I don't promote the games as much as I should. And probably in the future, I may try to court at least a few developers on the show and have them, come on. I know I've had a few guys, like I said, the Zona guys come in in the past and talk about what they're doing. So, maybe in the future we can help get the word out there. So,
yeah, I mean, with with the indie games, it's like I'll check them from time to time. You know, whenever I'm, you know, whenever I'm online checking out, you know, whatever the new Xbox Live Arcade game is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I usually you know stop by the indie games section, but it's like I don't usually see much that really grabs me enough to go out and get a points card.
Right.
I mean, it's another problem is if you buy a game for $1. You're left with like $4 worth of points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like with the Xbox Live arcade games, you know, it's like they're in intervals of, or, you know, $5, $10, $15 mm-hmm. you know, multiples. And that makes
might work. So if you have an extra dollar or two, why not check out the indie section where a lot of the games are $1 or two? And, you know, a good place to spend some of those extra points. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I kind of offloaded some that I had left over.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Beats buying a little picture.
I ended up buying a Street Fighter pack because there was nothing.
Wait a minute. You were just railing on Capcom. And here you go buying a Street
Fighter. There was nothing else of interest for really interested in for like 40 points. I mean, come on. I think it was like 40 points or 60 points or something like that.
Right.
It's like you can either have this or nothing. Have this or nothing. I found the pack with Cammy in it, and I'm like, okay, fine. I'll buy Cammy. Just take my points. Just go.
A sucker for the buns. Awesome. So anyway, if you'd like to read more of our opinions on video games, peripherals, hardware, all that good stuff, I encourage listeners to check out www.tech-gaming.com for latest reviews, editorials, podcasts. I know you got a couple of articles coming out, Baloo. You want to give us a clue? What's on the horizon? What's in the can?
Well,
who's on the can? What's in the can?
I'm sure that'll probably be an Xbox Live indie game at some point too.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what I've got coming, you and I are working on a tag team review of MLB Bobblehead Pros.
Right.
And I'm kind of thinking that you're going to be a little more generous towards it than I'm going to be, or a little more forgiving.
Okay. So look forward to that. So
yeah,
my niceness and Blue's harshness. He's going to say there's not enough bugs in it. Needs more Hectors.
Although, quick note.
Yes.
I'm pissed at that Insect Armageddon did not have a Godzilla-like monster in it.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing. At least Mothra.
Yeah, I mean, Mothra. All Mothra's good for is dying in the movies anyways. Right. I mean, he's never done anything good.
He's the best cannon fodder ever originally.
He's like the Piccolo of Godzilla movies. All he does, his only purpose is to, like, take up time and die.
Yep. It's Kenny, speaking of South Park. So, if you'd like to know our opinions on pretty much anything else, poop jokes and the like, you can follow us on Twitter. I am Robert Desert Eagle Allen, and I am at tech_gaming on hiatus and probably stressed, at least I got that impression last time I talked to him, was our old friend Sean Kirkland, and he is at Sean Nola, Nola. God, I miss asking what the two N's stand for. But they will make a reprise soon. Adam Malecki, you should have joined us tonight, but he's a dirty flake. You can follow him at at Tide Gear or at Rockin' Android, no G. Sage Morris Green, inexplicably gone. She is at Samarage. But Blue here, why don't you rattle off your Twitter?
You can find me at twitter.com/BLUECSWIM.
Is it case sensitive?
Nah.
Okay. So just throw the capital. Right?
I just said that to be dramatical. Dramatical.
Dramatical.
Me and the good are edumacated.
So please subscribe to us on iTunes. We have a new link. We got new art and the same old dirty poop jokes. And Sean always says, grab a Gravatar. Grab a Gravatar. That sounds good. And you can do that at www.gravatar.com. And that way you won't look like a selection of pixels, random pixels, which everyone
says. Basically, you won't look like me.
Or penis pixels, as some people have called them.
There are one or two Gravatars that look rather phallic-shaped.
Whose? Can we give a shout-out? The most penis-shaped one? I'm going to look right now. Actually, Quarterman looks like a vagina. Vic Viper, I don't know. Tesla Sun looks like a smiley face, but I guess a vagina. A Papa Poo Stick, definitely a vagina.
I love that.
Shots out. Oh, Waterman, penis. That. Taskmaster, penis. Blue Swim, you look like a spaceship, but could be a penis. Froggy
it
just
also looks like it could be like a wizard or a mage or something in like an old NES game.
Yeah, Froggy doesn't look like anything but the castle from Venture. Who else? Dirk Diggler, a name with a associated with penis, kind of looks like a happy face.
BG looks like a rather not so well endowed penis.
And there you have it. Roll call, the end of the show. See you guys next week. Love you. Bye.
Come on, Bubba. Let's play some Bubble Bobble. Yeah!
Okay, bumper me.
Deagle, what's the Tech Gaming Podcast doing in the middle of Alaska?
Should I say anything?